to Out of the Blue from Maize and Brew, part of the SB Nation Podcast Network. The podcast with the confidence of John O'Korn claiming to be the best quarterback in the 2018 draft. I am Jared Stormer of MaizeandBrew.com. With me, as always, is Andy Bailey, my hetero life mate, also of MaizeandBrew.com. Andy, you unyielding podcast rogue. How you been? How was your Independence Day?
July 4th was great, man. Spent it with my girlfriend. It was a lot of fun. I've been watching the Tour de France because I'm kind of weird like that. It's a great sports time. I mean, NBA Finals are on, Stanley Cup's on. Pick your flavor. Got whatever you want out there.
I love it. This is actually a great sports time. And, I mean, celebrating the separation from the imperialist powers, 4th of July. Also celebrating the time that Captain Stephen Hillard saved us from the aliens, liberating all of mankind. It's a beautiful, beautiful weekend. And, yeah, I'm in on the NBA Finals. I've been, in on all the Michigan news and excited to be back here talking some sports with you after a long break.
I know. It was a week off, spent time with our families. We try to do that occasionally.
I didn't see any family and neither did you. Don't lie. We got drunk in random cities with various individuals of ill repute.
With women. To see family. It just doesn't work out sometimes. So, we just kept, spreading the Michigan gospel out there. Had a lot of hypothetical conversations. Talked about how we're a basketball school, things like that.
Yes. I'm spreading the gospel that Michigan is a basketball school anywhere and everywhere that I go. However, there has been some news. Always got to start with that. Let's start with the good news here. The one that we were kind of waiting on that really gives us our outlook for next year in basketball. And that is the man, the myth, the legend, Hunter Dickinson, coming back for at least one more year to lead what should be the most loaded Michigan basketball unit that we've seen in some time.
And Devontae Jones, is that his name?
Devontae Jones, yes. Also, who was considering the draft. I didn't necessarily see him as much of a threat to go. I hadn't seen him in the top 150 prospects. So he needed a really good combine. But also, that's huge. I mean, let's not discredit that. You're absolutely right.
Starting lineup, Devontae Jones, Eli Brooks, Caleb Houston.
Probably.
Brandon Johns, Hunter Dickinson.
Oof.
Yeah. Okay, I'm in. I'm all
that
in.
Push the chips forward. A lot of sauce.
Yeah, especially the Brandon Johns resurgence in the tournament. It's this is what we've been waiting on. And now Hunter Dickinson's I got to develop an outside game and some right-handed post moves. Take everything from me.
Right, and I'm sure that was a lot of the feedback, kind of the stuff that we had broken down and other people had broken down. I mean, yeah. He was just getting the opinions of those guys, and everybody sees it, especially watching DeAndre Ayton and some of these guys in the finals, what you need to be a big man in the modern NBA and be successful. He still has some tools that he could build, but all the skills are there. The athleticism's there. The desire seems like a great guy to coach. Already becoming a leader on that team. The guys are pumped to have him back. So this is huge for the team. That is a understatement of understatements. He makes us, people are going to sleep on us like they do every year, but we have to be the favorites coming out of the big. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, coming out of the big, a top five team preseason, if not, it's just ludicrous. And he and Devontae Jones got some run together, running with the Sacramento Kings in their camp, NBA, whatever, transitional period. So they've already had some time together, which is just building the chemistry for next season already.
Let's go. Let's get some pick and rolls going. I'm absolutely here for it. So Devontae, probably primary ball handler, or Eli. I need to watch some more Devontae, but
probably Devontae. From Hunter Dickinson said he was a pretty sneaky good creator, but the fact having two ball handlers is not a bad thing, as we saw last year. And Eli Brooks plays so well off the ball, I'm fine with whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. This is going to be huge. Can't wait to go deeper into that as we inch closer to basketball season. But football season is the most immediate and pressing concern now as we shift towards that. The first news that dropped since we last spoke was the NIL news, which we kind of talked about off air, and we don't really know what to make of it yet. It's very early in the process. NIL standing for names, image, and likeness. Basically, players allowed to profit from their names, images, and likenesses at their university. This theoretically should be a great thing for Michigan, I think, is one thing we did agree upon, though.
Absolutely. It should be a great thing for Michigan. A lot of money to throw around to lure recruits. help expand with the network that Michigan has through alumni and everything else. The Barstool Dave Portnoy connection has been a big thing with people of that age. So another connection, it should help. This should be a big boon for Michigan recruiting, but we'll see, because looking at Michigan's cycle right now and teams like Ohio State's cycle right now, it's sad.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a moment. I wanted to touch on, you mentioned the Barstool connection. We've already seen some guys inking deals of some kind and some nature. I need to look into it more to see what the specifics of these deals are and how it's going to work. I've read, you know, kind of what they're trying to do down in Miami. I mean, it's at this point, it almost is going to be like the Wild Wild West. This has never happened before, and it's a new era, and, you know, we'll see exactly what it leads to. But Michigan being almost perennially a top five earner, you know, as far as college athletics, should put us in a great position to benefit from this. And I hope that we're just not so old school, you know, and archaic in our thinking that we don't realize how great of an opportunity this could be to balance the scales and maybe get some parity going again in college football.
If Maize and Brew could sponsor one athlete and you got to choose who it was, who would it be? From Michigan.
Ooh. See, I like, you mentioned Barstool. They went in on Andrell Anthony, and I like that approach. It's kind of like the gambling buy low and expect for a high output, you know, because they hear Andrell Anthony could be a guy. He's a freshman. No one's really heard of him. I like that approach, but I think we want somebody with some sauce. So if we're doing that, what about a Blake Corum?
Did you see that picture of Blake Corum today on Twitter?
He's massive. Like, he's a stud.
Did he eat the old Blake Corum? Like,
yeah.
Osman Savage. Has anybody heard from him? I think Blake Corum ate him.
That's the working theory right now. Police are looking into it. But I would go with somebody like that. Somebody that's got a little bit higher chance to pop this year. And if they pop, could end up being like one of the dudes in the Big Ten. Who would be your choice?
I would take AJ Henning, and I'm going to borrow a phrase from J.R. Smith and make shirts that say anything is possible.
That's a fantastic choice. And then sponsor him with Hennessy.
Exactly. That's easily the move.
He's like 19. I don't know if that would work.
I think he's almost 20. I had a hold up.
The rules?
So just get a shirt that says anything is possible. Sell itself.
I love how far ahead of the game you are, sir. We're all playing checkers.
I'm making chess moves. I tried to think about some of the other names on the team and where we could venture out to. There's definitely some options. Like, you could easily make Roman Wilson, like Roman Empire shirts, or just something with Cornelius Johnson. Like, you could do, there's some ways to be creative. You and I'd be great at this. Our Nico Suave shirt would have sold like,
oh man. Nico Suave.
Yeah.
Look, the people in Houston, it's not too late to get in on that. He's, you know, he's a Houston Texan, and Nico Suave, if he blows up, we need to cash in.
When
someone
you win
does.
One game this year, you're going to be mad. You're going to be proud you have this shirt.
Absolutely. I did see something, and I wish I could remember where I saw it, but I believe they were having like Vegas odds on who are going to be the top earners. And in the top names was Cade McNamara for potential top earners. I mean, because you are the quarterback of one of the richest schools.
Yeah, that's...
that's going to be a draw.
Dude, we could easily make like Cade Mack shirts and just have like the top of it frosted like his tips.
Yes, I love it. We need somebody whose nickname is Cheese so that we can have like a mac and cheese. Like, Andrell Anthony needs to somehow develop the nickname Cheese, and then it's just mac and cheese.
That's Andrell, I need to get on this. You have to.
Somehow become named Cheese.
Well, his is so easy with something like A-A-N-A-A. Like the
yeah,
A-A
yeah, there's something there.
There's something there.
Yeah, we'll do the nicknames podcast later down the line.
Oh, that one has to. It's my favorite podcast of the season. That might be our next podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's get to this podcast. And a few weeks ago, we did the 2013 season, what could have been, kind of an exercise looking back at these somewhat forgotten seasons, because if a season ends with a dud, it's so easy to just forget about it, move on, kind of go on to the next thing, and it becomes lost to history. But while you're in those seasons, they're really compelling, and there's some great storylines going on. And the 2017 season maybe had some of the most compelling storylines and is one of the biggest what-ifs and maybe in Michigan history.
Yeah, coming off the 2016 team, which is arguably one of the three greatest Michigan teams of all time, pound for pound, how talented it was, all the players that went into the draft months earlier. So coming off that season, everyone was riding high, but there was a lot of question marks in the air. One returning starter on defense. The offense was shaken up a little bit. A lot of losses of Chesson, Darbo. So there were a lot of questions to be answered. And we found out early, you know, heading into Florida, it was going to be a big test in Jerry World.
Yeah, so that was the game of the year. We came in ranked number 11. We go down there to Jerry World. Everyone eyes on that. Wilton Spade is named the starter. There was an open competition. We all were pretty sure it was going to be Spade. The freshman Brandon Peters, you know, was kind of the guy that people were talking about. But this was a great recruiting class coming in. 30 recruits came in this recruiting class. No matter how you slice it, it was a top five class coming in. This is the year they went to Italy in the spring, which was really cool. They were still doing all those trips. Who knows if that'll ever happen again. Open up in Arlington, Jerry World, the Tariq Black, Quinn Nordine game, where I'm sure if you went back and listened to our podcast, we anointed Quinn Nordine and Tariq Black as the saviors of the program.
Quinn Nordine hit a 55-yard field goal like it was nothing in this game. It's like, okay, this is the hype. This is why Jim Harbaugh stayed the night at your house and was climbing trees in Pennsylvania. Like, it all makes sense.
Like a lunatic.
Like, yeah.
But to be fair, he was the first kicker in Michigan history to hit two 50-plus yard field goals in the same game. And we win that game 33-17. And at that point, this wasn't the highest hype point of the year, but hype was high here.
Yeah, Ty Isaac went for a buck 14, averaged 10 yards a carry. Wilton Spate was awful, just irrefutably awful in this game. He was only 11 of 25, then threw one touchdown and two picks. Like,
that's awful. And we won 33-17.
The two things I remember the most about this game are the coming out party for the players you already mentioned, Tariq Black and Nordine, and also the arrival of Chase Winovich.
Yes, absolutely. On defense, guys start showing up. Devin Bush has a great highlight reel from this game. So you start to see some of the young talent come in, and the defense is going to be a common thing in this podcast, because this offense, there's just no rhyme or reason to any of it, but this defense kept us in every game in this entire year. So then after that, Cincinnati, first year of Luke Fickell, after we showed him the door at Ohio State and gave him a loss there. Not really much I remember about this game other than Kakoa Crawford catches a touchdown in this game. So we've got wide receivers catching touchdowns against Florida and against Cincinnati. So remember that, because it doesn't happen much after this.
The rest of the season gets very grim. And coming off the high that was Florida, Michigan kind of enters this lull period with Cincinnati that continues the next weekend to Air Force, where it's just best described as, they got the win. There's nothing to write home about. Cincinnati wasn't the dominant group of five team they are now. They were just kind of middling as Fickell was building the program, and there wasn't too much to take away. It was like, okay, Michigan's just kind of playing down to the level of their competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next couple games kind of follow that same pattern that you were just talking about, where it's like, all right, you know, the better team kind of just wins out in the fourth quarter. Like, things were really tight against in all the next games. Against Cincinnati, which we win 36-14. Spate finishes that game. Air Force, closer than it should have been, but we pull away late, 29-13. Donovan Peoples-Jones has a 79-yard punt return in this one. Kind of his coming out game. That was a great moment for him. Absolutely shook the punter in that one. I mean, you should always shake the punter, but it was nasty. 29-13 in that one. Then we get to Purdue and things start to get interesting.
Yeah, this is where the season really starts to swing, because Wilton Spate gets injured and enter John O'Korn, who at the time, please never revisit our podcast after this game, because we say things we can never take back about John O'Korn, positive things.
It's bad.
So that John O'Korn enters, and where are his numbers?
He actually was pretty respectable in that he goes 18 of 26 for 270 yards, a touchdown and an interception. And yeah, like you said, we had a podcast after that just talking about the sauce that he brought, because up to that point, Wilton Spate really had struggled, and we were not sold on Wilton Spate. And we, you know, the backup quarterback is always the most popular guy on the team. And we had heard O'Korn was ahead of Peters, so we were like, all right, well, I guess let's try O'Korn. He comes in, has a little bit more juice, and gets the win at Purdue. You know, we're looking good. We're undefeated already at this point in the season. And then comes Michigan State and the wheels fall off.
God, what do you remember most?
At home, yeah. No less.
At home in a monsoon.
The dumbest game ever.
Maybe the single most frustrating game of the Jim Harbaugh era, because it's a monsoon and the team just wants to aerate it. They just want to sling the ball around and pretend like we're Texas Tech with Cliff Kingsbury. And it's awful. The game is disaster, and there's the famous, famous play of the Michigan State player making the choking sign right after Eddie McDoom dropped a pass late in the game to lose. And, yeah, this was a dark time. This is a dark game.
This is the darkest timeline here. Let's just start with the fact that they threw the ball 35 times in a monsoon, in an absolute monsoon, and you had your running backs were basically the core of your team. You had a triumvirate of Higdon, Evans, and Isaac that were really, really good. So you get 12 carries for Higdon, 12 for Evans, and Ty Isaac got like 4, I think.
Yeah, barely.
And John O'Korn threw the ball 35 times.
Yeah, and threw 3 picks while he was at it.
While he was doing it. Like, so this game, and I remember like our podcast after this game, we went in on the coaching staff. This was a coaching loss for sure, in my opinion. And revisiting it now down the road, I still think this is a coaching loss. To put John O'Korn out there and to be like, no, we're going to win or lose this game on your arm at home in a monsoon.
Brian Lewerke was 11 for 22, 94 yards and a touchdown in a winning effort. Like
in a winning effort, because 22 is that you should not throw it more than 20 times in a monsoon. Why would you?
But Michigan's only beaten Michigan State one time at home under Jim Harbaugh.
Yikes.
Yeah, we lost in 15, 17, and we won in 19. That 19's our only win at home against Michigan State at the Big House.
Disgusting. Fire him.
That's your best case for it, because those first two home Michigan State losses are trouble with the snap, which is not on him, but this one is entirely on the coaching staff. Like it was, the conditions were awful. Like you said, a monsoon.
It was bad, but revisiting this, I think exactly what I thought the first time we went through this. So I'm sticking with that.
The fact that they won two and they didn't score in the second half.
They didn't score in the second half. They still beat us 14-10. 12 carries for Caron Higdon is criminal.
He was averaging 5.4 yards a carry.
That's criminal. Like that is negligence.
The leading receivers on this team, if you want to get even sadder, Grant Perry, a receiver, and then it's Sean McCune, Caron Higdon, Khalid Hill, Chris Evans, Ian Bunting, Eddie McDoom, and Maurice Ways. That's who caught passes.
9 of those 10 people are employees at Office Depot.
Yeah, did you make this up? The next year, Chris Evans was delivering pizzas in Ann Arbor. Literally, Ian Bunting disappeared.
Yeah, we still don't know where he's at. I hope he's okay. All right, so Michigan State, we lose 14-10. It goes from really being a season that could be amazing. You lose to a rival. It's dark and it looks like Mordor out on the field and the coaching staff seems to blow it. We went from really high to really low because we also didn't have an answer at quarterback. We go into Indiana. We go to Indiana and John O'Korn goes, and this is not a made up statistic, 10 of 20 for 58 yards in a winning effort. Thank God Caron Higdon exists. Who went for over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns in this game, but my God.
It's one of the worst passing lines I've ever seen in a winning effort.
I think it is.
This is the best quarterback in the 2018 draft, self-proclaimed.
So he says.
But God bless Caron Higdon. He doesn't get enough credit for this season. He finishes just 6 yards away from 1,000. And
which is also just, that's like a testament to how close and yet far away this season was from greatness.
If Caron Higdon had the touches in the Michigan State game like he deserved, he would have 2,000-yard seasons at Michigan.
Yeah. The coaching staff really failed Caron Higdon because he obviously should have gone over a bit. That's a great point. If you get even close to what you should get in a game in a monsoon, which I think for your lead back should be 18 carries.
It should have been the Michigan Notre Dame game of 2019 when it was raining at the Big
House.
Look
what he did, yeah.
And they learned the lesson at least. And you just pound Haskins. That's what you should have done in this
absolutely.
One.
That's we just keep going back to it because we're so mad. But yeah, they cost him a 1,000-yard season. So yeah, we get that win at Indiana. Then we go at Penn State. This game is a weird game in that it was 21-13 at the half. We're staying in this. And really, our defense in the first half throughout the season was incredible. At this point, Don Brown is really, he's at home with this defense. And while the defensive numbers don't blow you away as far as like points per game, the fact that they kept us in every single game, even this Penn State game, which got ugly late, was a testament to why this could have been such a good season.
Yeah, even when it got ugly at the end of the year in a yards per game like measurement, Michigan finished third in the country. Like, there was a great defense that season with what they had to fill in. And Penn State really came out here on one, because the year before, don't forget, they won the Big Ten. And they went to the Rose Bowl and won and upset USC and Sam Darnold. But Michigan smoked them in the Big House. Just rolled this team when they were 2-2. So they came in with a real edge at Happy Valley. It was at night. And eventually Saquon Barkley was just too much.
Three total touchdowns for Barkley in that game. Don't look at Michigan's offensive stats in that game. They will upset you. After that, it's Rutgers. So at this point, we got two losses, Michigan State, Penn State. We're pretty much out of the Big Ten race. So we're pretty down in that regard. But a two-loss season is still a great season if you can win out. And obviously, Ohio State still looming there. But we don't really know what we have at quarterback after that abhorrent performance. Then we get Rutgers. Caron Higdon and Ty Isaac both go over 100 yards rushing in this. But the story is John O'Korn goes 3-for-5 and a pick to start this game. And it starts raining booze in Ann Arbor. In comes Brandon Peters. And all of a sudden, hope runneth anew in Ann Arbor.
Brandon Peters walks in, goes 10-of-14 for 124. But more importantly, it was similar, honestly, to last season when Cade McNamara came in. It was just it was hope. He came in there slinging the ball, was delivering it accurately on time. And it was like, okay, this is what a competent quarterback should look like. I mean, sorry, Joe Milton, you fell apart. So this is what it looked like. And again, we immediately got sucked in. But early in the season, I remember I was at the spring game that year, and you watched it on TV. We're like, dude, Brandon Peters is like Peyton Manning today. We're just slinging the ball. And he came in. He finally got his run. We've been calling for him all year. And came in here and we thought, okay, we're going to salvage this season and we're going to run the table.
I'm glad you brought up the spring game, because he was a gamer in the spring game, came in and looked like the best guy. And you and I are big believers in that, and that some guys you just need to put under the bright lights. And he came in and you can't say that he lit it up. 10-for-14 for a 124 is solid, but it's not, you know, changing the world. Obviously, they, you know, made the offense simple for him. They leaned on their running game, but that's all we needed. Cause I mean, if you look at the Michigan State loss and even the Penn State game, we didn't need much to get wins in those games. We just needed average quarterback play. And for him to come in and be average, you know, as a freshman, that was hope again, you know, for this team at that point.
As we revisit this and we see like the Tim Drevno play calling effects and, you know, his influence there, but also the coaching decision not to run the ball as much, was the offense archaic or was the play calling just bad?
I think it was the play calling. Now that we revisit this, especially looking at the offensive numbers from 2016, when this offense was crazy efficient and crazy good in the red zone and, you know, averaged almost 40 points a game. And then this season, for there to be such a drop off. Now, Wilton Spate was not lighting it up out of the gate. John O'Korn never lit it up, but yet we were winning games and, you know, we were putting up 30 something points a game. So we all saw that it was there. We just needed to work within the talent that we had, and we were not doing that. So I put a lot of it on play calling. You know, we were not happy with Tim Drevno at this point in the season.
No, we weren't. It's really interesting just to come back to that, because I remember at the time we're like, oh, we need to be running the spread. We need to do this and that. And I think it was just a lot simpler. It was like, we need to just do what we do best. Because when we pounded the rock, it was fine. And if you do that against, you know, against the bigger teams like Penn State, Wisconsin, you need to have a little bit more versatility. But arguably, if we run the ball against Michigan State and our quarterback doesn't get hurt against Wisconsin, there's two more wins.
Absolutely. And Wisconsin, look, do they ever really have elite quarterbacks? They do what we're talking about right now. Play good defense, run the ball well enough, and, you know, don't have your quarterback kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what we were looking for this season. We didn't come into 2017 with high expectations, but because of how close we were and the fact that we started out with some really good wins, and or even in the losses, it's like those could have been wins. You know, it's you start to really want more for this team. And I think at this point in the season, we really wanted more. But after that, Minnesota. Wanted to get into that one because I think this may be the second peak of the hype. This is the one. We win this one 33-10. Caron Higdon goes for 200 yards. Chris Evans goes for 191 in that game. We win it 33-10. Kalik Hudson sets the record for tackles for losses.
I was at this game, and it was delayed because of there was a huge rainstorm that night. It was also the same night, I believe, Ohio State got blown out by Iowa at Kinnick. It's like 55-20. So the stadium was just hot because we're all inside the Chrysler watching this game on the TVs. And then we go into the big house, and Evans and Higdon just go berserk. Minnesota can't get out of the backfield. This was the game when I saw Ambry Thomas for the first time in person. I'm like, oh, he's the fastest player on the field.
I remember that.
This is when like you really felt like, oh, okay, Michigan is still here. We still have that 2016 juice where we can turn it up against a team like this.
Absolutely. And the fact that, you know, we had hope renewed from Brandon Peters being the starter now and looking like he had control of the offense. And we know what we've got. We are a running team. We have an identity. We are going to run the ball and we are going to play defense. Okay, let's go. Bet. I like it. Like, I'll put our 11 on defense against your 11 on offense any day. And yeah, after that win, and then we get Maryland. It's 28-0 at the half. So, like, after that Minnesota game, Henry Pogge's out here running touchdowns against Maryland. This is at Maryland. Peters is slinging it in this game. At this point, Chris Evans goes over the 500-yard rushing mark. Isaac and Higdon are well over that. Looks like Higdon's rushing to 1,000 yards. Peters goes 9 for 18, 145, 2 touchdowns. It's a 35-10 win. No problems. We're going to Wisconsin the next week.
Was that? Oh yeah, that. At this point, like you said, Michigan knew who they were. They're rolling, and there's something to be said about you knowing yourself in right. football and in life. Like no matter what, it's like you know who you are. It's a big advantage. So Michigan, we have all this momentum. We roll into Camp Randall. The atmosphere is crazy, and we're right there in this game until we're not. When Brandon Peters goes down with an injury.
And I mean, we're going to talk about the categories in the second half, but it's hard. There's obviously two instances to point at. Wilton Spate goes down and then Peters goes down. The game is tied at the half here. Peters goes out sometime right before the half. The second half, John O'Korn comes in. He goes 2 for 8. We can't move the ball whatsoever. Wisconsin pulls away late in this one. And I mean, it just kind of seemed like the end, and we were really bummed about it. You know, we're going against Ohio State, but Ohio State's at home the next week. This was an emotional roller coaster, is what I remember about this point in the season.
And this game was crazy too because Wisconsin was undefeated. They were 11-0 at this point, fifth in the country, and had the second best defense in the country. And Michigan is right there with them. That's why this season has been such a fun, like, what if, because you see where the potential was. Like, it was said 7-7 at half. And then without Peters in the next half, they outscores 14-3 in the third, and the game's pretty much over from there.
Yeah, it's a big what if and a game that was so much within our reach. And then there's Ohio State. So the Ohio State game, there was talk that maybe Peters would play for that game. We were really hoping for that. I remember on the podcast saying I was pretty down. At that point, we were O'Korn haters. So we're like, if O'Korn starts, we don't stand a chance. If Peters starts, we like us in this game. Ohio State that year, like, it just felt like a year that we could get one. It was at home.
Ohio State kind of down 2 losses that year.
Yeah, exactly. Down for them. Then we got the word O'Korn was starting. But then this game, you know, when they roll the balls out, I mean, at half, it's a tight, tight contest. We had the lead at, 21-0 at one point?
Michigan, 14-0.
14-0.
Ohio State has the ball, and Josh Metellus drops a would-be pick six. I believe it was like second down for them on Michigan's 40. And then about two or three plays later, JT Barrett scores. And then it's 14-7, then 14-14 at half.
it's a little too early in the game to call it like the crux of the game, and this is what shifted it, especially with all the chances we had on offense, but would have been a absolutely huge play. I mean, it could have been a 14-point swing at that point in the game. So, and then John O'Korn just misses wide open receivers in the second half and becomes the quarterback that he is.
It's even then, though, it was 21-20 after three quarters. We're right in this thing. It was 24-20. Michigan has the ball driving right near midfield with O'Korn. And it's like, okay, here we go. Fourth and four. Jim Harbaugh is putting it on the table. And he just doesn't look at Chris Evans on the checkdown, who's standing there wide open at the first down marker. And then they get the ball, move it a couple plays, and Mike Weber rips our hearts out.
And of all the things that we've screamed on this podcast, isn't Chris Evans is always open in the flat like one of the things that we've screamed the most?
When they ran that touchdown to him in 2018 against Ohio State, we're just like, thank you.
We lost it. We were like, why aren't you doing this all the time?
You talk about how it's hard to blame the crux of this game on Metellus, but what it reminds me of is also in 2018, when Shea Patterson fumbles the ball inside the five near the goal line, and it goes right to an Ohio State player. But then Dobbins fumbles it for Ohio State, and it bounces like a basketball right back to him, and he still rushes right into for 12 his hands. Yards.
Yeah, where it's just like, for some reason, somebody in the Michigan family somewhere along the line did something to really upset the football gods.
Yeah, there's somebody. Fitz Chrysler made somebody mad a long time ago, and we're still getting, you know, ripped off. Benny Oosterbaum did something and just, like, spat on a gypsy. And
pretty sure Benny Oosterbaum, like, buried some Native American remains underneath one of the end zones or something.
That's the only way to explain some of these happenings. But, yeah, this season quickly went from what could have been a resurgent, kind of surprising, fun, quirky underdog team to 8-5.
But all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the bowl game, and then we will get into some of the categories and the awards for what could have been with this absolutely bizarre season. We'll talk about that right after this. All right, welcome back to Out of the Blue. We are talking about what could have been the 2017 season. An absolute calamity of errors that really stemmed from injuries on this one. We talked through all of the games in the beginning, in the bowl game. What do you remember about this bowl game, the 2017 bowl game?
I believe this was the complete collapse, like in the second half, like where Michigan had a lead. It was
the South Carolina game.
Yeah, and then just fell apart completely.
26-19 was the, yeah, absolutely. This game looked like we were completely in control in this one. I believe Wilton Spate came back for this one.
Let me see. I got it right.
Yeah, who came back? We had three different quarterbacks this season, which really defined it. But yeah, ending with a win against South Carolina, even though this was kind of a lost season, still would have really set a better tone and given us a much better taste in our mouth with this season.
Peters came back and was.
That's right.
Here it is. Here's the play calling again. How many passes did Brandon Peters throw in this game?
I'm going to say he threw like 20 passes.
44.
That's preposterous.
Brandon Peters was 20 of 44 with two picks. Caron Higdon had 17 carries. Chris Evans had 9.
How did this coaching staff, based on like the fact that this was the run first, this was like old school Harbaugh, Tim Drevno, built on the offensive line and running. You've got a 1,000-yard rusher in Caron Higdon. Yeah, I do not understand that.
It makes absolutely no sense. Michigan was outscored 10-0 in the fourth quarter, which cost them the game. And yeah, that's exactly what I remember, just a collapse. Like, oh, we're going to get through this game at South Carolina, not excited to be here. And then they took advantage. And I think that's one of the biggest stains of the Harbaugh era is every season has ended with a back-to-back dud performance of Ohio State in a bowl game, except for 15.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, except for his first year, and we just can't get the bowl win, which, look, if it's not the Rose Bowl or, you know, a championship game, I get it. That might not excite some people, but it's still a game for the program. It's a chance for the fans to get behind this team, to root for these guys one more time. I think they matter still. I still watch the South Carolina game.
Like, you know what feels good? Winning. At anything.
Watching your team get a win. So, all right. So let's get into some of the players that we remember from this. But first, before we do that, need to give some love to our sponsors at Home Field Apparel, the Home Field Apparel company out of Indianapolis. Some of the most incredibly comfortable, affordable sportswear apparel that you're going to find out there on the market. Take a look at the selection. They've got anything that you need as far as old school, new school designs. They've got the Michigan line absolutely covered. I have spent maybe more than I should, but at Home Field, you don't really have to worry about getting price gouged. So that's the beauty of it. So you can get 20% off with your first purchase with MNB at checkout when you go to homefieldapparel.com. All right, so the players that you remember most. So I'll start it out on offense. I remember this as like the year of the running back. I remember Higdon, Evans, and Ty Isaac. And Ty Isaac could have been awesome if he could have held on to the ball. I remember him having fumble problems, but really looking like a stud.
He always struggled to stay healthy. Originally began his career at USC, similar issues. He was massive, by the way. Wasn't Ty Isaac like 6'3"?
6'3", I think, yeah.
Yeah, just a massive human being. You touched on it earlier. We had three running backs go over 500 yards. Higdon, 994. Evans, 685. And who was it? Ty Isaac had 548 on only 88 carries. I mean, so each running back averaged over 5 yards a carry. Isaac with the best average of all. And those are what kept us alive. So it felt really weird to see like bowl games where we're throwing the ball 44 times.
Yeah, it was absolutely strange. It'll be remembered as the year of the quarterback, though, and you can't help but mention all three because all three played a role. Spate, because he went out early. O'Korn, because he was the transfer that was brought in from Houston with the huge numbers. You know, that was the reclamation project, but played way better at Houston. And there was Peters, the guy that was supposed to be the future of the program that, you know, the fans mostly wanted to see. Which one of these quarterbacks, if healthy, and we can go ahead and remove O'Korn, but between Peters and Spate, if healthy, playing the whole year, which one would you have rather had for the 2017 season?
I would have probably leaned toward Peters in this one. Spate just didn't seem to have that playmaking juice. I mean, he was good against – he played decent against Florida. I can't say good. His numbers weren't great. But the funny thing about this season is the parallels from our top three passers to our top three rushers. Top passer, 973 yards. Top rusher, 994. Second passer, 672. Second rusher, 685.
That's mad.
Third rusher, 58. Third passer, 581. Third rusher, 548.
That is crazy. So pretty much across the board, this team was a team on the ground through and through, and we're going to live and die on the ground.
Yeah, we could not throw the ball. It finished with 9 passing touchdowns and 10 interceptions.
That is abhorrent.
It is. You should never have your, like, if you're having three quarterbacks play that much, their numbers should never align that much with a rushing attack.
No, absolutely not. Some of the other names that were on this team, though, just to mention them, we did have Khalid Hill and Ben Mason on the team at the same time. What an all-timer for fullbacks. This was a better tight end lineup than we've had in a while with Gentry, McEwen, Eubanks. You still had Tariq and Nico and DPJ on this team, but those guys are freshmen. And Tariq was actually the best freshman. And then Grant Perry's actually your leading wide receiver on this team. And I mean, that goes to say something. But the defense,
307 yards.
Oh, Jesus. The defense, however, had some guys. But this was, once again, the freshman class. We're bringing in, like, you know, the young guys, Devin Bush, Khalik Hudson, Winovich, are coming along. But you still got some holdovers. This was kind of Mo Hurst's team, the one returning starter.
I would have to look this up. I don't know if there's how many college football defenses of all time have at least 6 players with 10 or more tackles for loss in a season, but this team has it.
This is where it gets crazy. You got those stats brought up. Now's a good time to get into it.
I got them. So tackles for loss leaders, I'm going to go 1-6 in order. Chase Winovich, 19.
Which is crazy. We talked about this a few weeks ago. That's madness.
19. Second, Mike McCray, who shares an Instagram with his girlfriend, now wife. 16. Tied with Khalik Hudson, who also has 16 tackles for loss.
That's crazy. So, and then you've got what? Maurice Hurst with 13 next?
Correct. And then Gary is 11.5. And then Devin Bush with 10.
Okay, and then the sack numbers pretty much line up with that. Winovich leads the team with 8.5. Kalik Hudson with 7.5, which is a monster number for a sophomore at this point.
Yes.
Yeah. For a sophomore.
True sophomore.
Yeah, at this point. 5.5 from Gary. 5.5 from Hurst at the defensive tackle position. 5.5 from sophomore Bush. 4.5 from McCray. This is a balanced team that lived in the backfield. And like with Maurice Hurst there as that penetrating defensive tackle, I really think that is what made this defense so good. I looking back at this, these numbers are great around the board. This was the Hurst defense.
I'm with you. I think it really changed a lot of things because you had Hurst in there to do a lot more than Michigan's had in the Harbaugh era from a defensive tackle standpoint. And then behind him, you had a heat-seeking missile in Devin Bush. And you had this edge combo that no one knew about Chase Winovich coming in was going to be this good. And Rashawn Gary's best season. So, I mean, it was just
Hudson's best season.
Easily Kalik Hudson's best season. It was a lot of guys that there's not a lot of tape on yet coming onto the scene and announcing themselves. And it's kind of like a Don Brown defense, tailor-made. Like, if he could make it, it would be this.
And you have David Long and LaVert Hill playing, like, absolutely shut down, lockdown on both corners. You got Ambry Thomas and Brandon Watson on this team as well.
Quiddy Pay, Josh Uche
Tyree played. Cannell is back there and having a really good season for it. So it's a well-rounded team. For returning one defensive starter, like, this is one of the most impressive defensive performances and, like, goes to show why at one point we were so high on Don Brown.
Yeah, Don Brown is still a good coach, and I believe he'll have success again, and this season points to it. The versatility, the way he found the guys to fit in and not lose a step from 16 is just very impressive. So, yeah, this was such an interesting season, and it was the year when just players were coming out of nowhere. Like, I never thought Chase Winovich would be one of my favorite Wolverines ever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it started this year. Devin Bush, pretty early on in the Florida game, I was like, oh, this is going to be my favorite player ever. Probably needs to lay off the Twitter for a while, but
sit a couple plays out now.
Maybe sit one out here with the Twitter Devin Bush. But yeah, at this point, I was pretty high on him. Anybody else on the defense you wanted to mention that stood out to you that year?
So let me see. I was just running through the whole roster. I think just honestly, just the surprising depth of seeing players like Quiddy Pay have a sack. Noah Furbush was awesome on this team.
Yeah.
Finished the year with 3 tackles for loss, a sack, 1 pick, a pass deflection, 2 fumble recoveries, and a touchdown.
Yeah.
Like,
that's yeah. And isn't he like designing rockets and satellites now?
Something like that. Always had the great hair and was just aggressive player in there. He was like diet Josh Uche. Like, he played well, explosive, just, you know, did have it to the next level, but, like, very serviceable. I love Noah Furbush.
Josh Uche was on this team, too, right?
Yeah, Uche was on this team as well, still trying to find his way. Aubrey Solomon's on this team, Jordan Glasgow. Back to the offense really quick. Do you remember Kareem Walker?
Yeah, also on this team. I sure do, yeah.
Kareem Walker really didn't. I had a tough time spelling academics sometimes.
Yeah, he had a rough go of it, but also McDoom. Kakoa Crawford, yeah. We had the all-name, all-hair team at receiver. We were excited about that.
Man, Eddie, I loved Eddie the Doom. Tyrone Wheatley was still there. Ways, Drake Harris,
Mo Ways. Yeah, there were some guys we were high on that never panned out for sure.
Best fullback room ever with Pogi, Mason, and Khalid Hill.
Yes, yeah. I wrote that down as well. I was like, oh, man, that fullback room is nasty. Why don't we just run more Ben Mason and Khalid Hill? Let's go.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, we don't need the Carlo Kemp run game. We had it. We had Pogi back there.
Pogi, baby. Let's go.
So, 44 pass attempts against South Carolina. Like,
yeah, it goes to show. All right, let's get into these categories to kind of wrap up what happened with this season. First category is turning point of the season. This, I don't know that you're going to be able to pick one for this. I think you have to pick two. But let's hear. I mean, the nominees, obviously. Wilton Spate going out against Purdue. Brandon Peters going out against Wisconsin. John O'Korn missing Chris Evans for 4 yards against Ohio State. Josh Metellus dropping the interception against Ohio State. And, yeah, those we'll stick with that. Or the just overall coaching against Michigan State.
Honestly, because I want to pick the Wisconsin injury to Brandon Peters, but that's so late in the season. Like, yes. That's second to last game.
Right.
Yeah. Anything Ohio State's tough. We can get into that individually in a second. I'm going to go with just, man, it's so tough. I want to go the coaching at Penn State, coaching at Michigan State, because Michigan was seventh and Michigan State was unranked.
Right.
And we're throwing the ball that many times in a monsoon. But I'm also torn about a look in the Penn State game, just not being able to move the ball in the second half. But it's like, okay, well, that kind of goes back to this injury. So I'm going to go, honestly, the Wilton Spade injury.
Yeah, it's, that's what I was going to say.
Because starts there.
It's hard to choose the whole game as a turning point
yeah.
with Michigan State. Because, I mean, at any point in that game, you could have started running the ball and probably had a different outcome. Same with Penn State. Like, if you can get anything going in the second half. But if I have to pick one moment that turned the season, it's the Wilton Spade injury.
Yeah, because the next game is Michigan State, and that's when it all starts
exactly.
to kind of trickle.
So if Wilton Spade's in that, I don't know. Hopefully they wouldn't have felt the need to throw it 40 times, but if they did, you know, I'd rather have Wilton Spade throwing it than O'Korn.
Yeah, that's the right answer.
So, all right, best moment of the season.
Minnesota.
Yeah, I was going to say, a couple, yeah, a couple. Well, let's not forget, opening the season at Jerry World, ranked 11th against number 17 Florida, Tariq Black as a freshman catching a touchdown. In the all maize uniform, you know, we were pretty excited at that point. Against Minnesota or at Maryland with Brandon Peters kind of on a run there.
It's the Florida game is tough because Michigan wins 33-17, but literally 14 of Florida's points come off Wilton Spate pick sixes.
Yeah. That's a weird one.
I like the Minnesota game because it's a blowout, 33-10 at home, 200-yard rushers. And I think Caron Higdon, almost, I think he might have gotten 200 in that game. He was close.
Higdon got 200. Evans had 190.
Yeah, that, and then you get the Khalik Hudson game, breaking the NCAA record for tackles for loss. Easily my favorite moment of the season.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm not even going to argue that. I was just trying to bring up some other options, but I'm with you. That was the best moment. And you believe we can beat Ohio State at that moment, you know?
Yeah, because like I said, same night, they get blown out by Iowa at Kinnick.
Game we should have won. Couple candidates in this one. We've already talked through them, but the top two have to be Michigan State and Wisconsin.
I mean, they could be
South Carolina is a good one.
Or Ohio State.
Or like, Ohio State. Yeah, you've got
14-0 lead.
But the game we absolutely should have won is at home against Michigan State. There is no way it's any of the other ones.
Correct. That's the only acceptable answer because, like, you could say Ohio State, we had the lead. You could say Wisconsin, we're tied. But no, it's Michigan State.
The next one is actually probably South Carolina because we were up in that game.
Yeah, and that was just
– and just crap the bed.
Michigan was a better team than South Carolina.
Absolutely,
it's just,
Michigan was a better team than South Carolina. They just kind of lost focus and, went downhill after that. All right, game we should have lost. I don't know about this one. This one's a little tougher. I will maybe Air Force. We did not play well against Air Force. And had a lot of trouble until late in that game. Same with Cincinnati. Those were kind of meh games. But it never really felt like we were going to lose. Air Force was much too close for my liking.
Read John O'Korn's stat line from Indiana again.
It's Indiana. 10 for 20 for 58 yards. How did we win that game? I just forgot all about it. It's Indiana.
It made no sense. Win by a touchdown just because Caron Higdon goes superhuman in this game. Honestly, Caron Higdon needs to be more appreciated is what I'm getting out of this podcast.
Yes. This season could have actually been awful if we didn't have a running back. This could have been one of the worst seasons you ever witnessed.
Yeah, just Caron Higdon saving this team over and over again. So, yeah, you could say Air Force, but it's like just struggled in that game more than we should have. But Indiana, that passing line, 58 yards?
No, you're right. I'm stupid. I'm wrong.
That is the game we should have lost, yes.
Yeah. All right, my favorite category. The Chris Vernon, what are we doing here moment. The moment of the season where it was inexplicable, the most inexplicable moment of the season. A few candidates. John O'Korn, 10 for 20 for 58 yards against Indiana and still being in the game and not playing Brandon Peters. Overall coaching against Michigan State, let's point to 35 passing attempts in a monsoon. 44 passing attempts for a coming off injury Brandon Peters in a bowl game when you have a 1,000-yard rusher?
John O'Korn, Ohio State, looking over.
Not seeing Chris Evans on 4th and 4. Look, that happens. Like, in the moment of the game, missing a guy, like, that happens.
I just want to mention it.
Yeah, yeah, it's mentionable. But
honestly, like, Wilton Spate back-to-back pick sixes against Florida. It's up there.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. Like, a game we could have lost if we weren't, like, such a better team than Florida at that point.
I think those were, like, 2 straight passing attempts, too. Like, I think it was like...
Yeah. unfortunately, the what are we doing here moment is 100% 35 passing attempts from John O'Korn in a monsoon.
Yeah, it's honestly close runner-up, though, is off-injury Brandon Peters with 44 in the bowl
attempts.
Game.
Look, if you had...
he can't feel his arm.
If you had last year Illinois Brandon Peters throwing 44 attempts, like, all right, let's talk. Like, that is not the case.
He just left the hospital. He was discharged that morning.
And they had him out there hucking it 44 times.
Like, yeah, rub some dirt on it. Caron doesn't need 1,000.
Like, that's high for a pitch count.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, it has to go to the passing in the Michigan State game. And it's their fault Eddie McDoom dropped that pass because they're forcing into a a no-win situation. You get the choke meme that comes out of it that always circulates. It's 100% on the coaching staff. Like, what are we doing here throwing the ball like that in a rainstorm?
Yep, that is the what are we doing here moment. Offensive MVP is a morose category.
It is without 110% the man we've been talking about this whole podcast.
It's Caron Higdon. But, I mean, like, if you look anywhere else, it's morose.
Chris Evans, number 2. Ty Isaac, number 3.
Those are your MVPs. Don't mention anyone else. Actually, what are Khalid Hill's touchdown numbers on that season?
Khalid Hill had 3. Caron Higdon had 11, and Chris Evans had 7.
Okay, yeah. So we've mentioned everyone we need to mention there. Let's move on.
Hold on. I have one more fun stat for you.
Oh, please.
All right, so how many Michigan players had more than 1 touchdown reception? All position.
I think Sean McEwen and maybe Zach Gentry had 2, or maybe Zach Gentry had 1.
Correct. Sean McEwen had 3. Zach Gentry had 2.
There we go.
And then the next 4 players each had 1 of Chris Evans, Grant Perry, Kakoa Crawford, and Tariq Black. And in Grant Perry's the only one that played all 4 years.
Good God. It's not really a fair ask because I've done my research on the season now. But yeah, I knew it was really rough with the receiving numbers because we go a long time without a receiver touchdown to the point when we have one the next season, it makes national news.
It finally explodes, thank God, in 2018. But yeah, Caron Higdon, 11 touchdowns. Chris Evans, 7. Honorable mention offensive line. I think was Mank Mason Cole was still there playing tackle, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah, I'm with you.
Honorable so yeah, Mason there. Cole, also honorable mention, yeah.
Here's a just a superlative before we get to the next category here. Did this season and how awful it was with the passing attack, did that spur changes to the coaching staff, in your opinion? Like, even 100%. Though it was largely driven by injuries, like, the inability to get the ball to a wide receiver and the perception of that, I'm with you. That had to have spurred some of the changes that came after this.
The noise around the program was so loud at that time. So I think it definitely turned their hand here. But I also want to ask you this, was looking at how abhorrent the passing was this season, are we lucky we got 8 wins?
We're lucky we got 8 wins, but when you go back on it, this could have been 10.
Yeah.
This could have been 10.
It's just it's such a bizarre team. The passing is non-existent. Like, you wonder if, like, you just go completely the other route. We don't throw the ball more than 10 times in every game. Do we go 10-2?
Right. Right. I mean, yeah, but we're going to get to that. All right, defensive MVP. Couple candidates here. We already talked about Maurice Hurst. He's probably your front runner, even though his stats aren't necessarily going to be the best. Chase Winovich, you mentioned, maybe co-front runner, because that's absurd. 19 tackles for loss and 8.5 sacks is a monster year. And I believe not an All-American this year, but all Big Ten. Maurice Hurst, all Big Ten. Rashawn Gary, 11.5, 5.5. You could throw him in there. Kalik Hudson, you have to mention, with 16 tackles for loss, 7.5 sacks, and he ties the NCAA record for tackles for loss in a game. Anybody else? Mike McCray.
You say Devin Bush?
I didn't say Devin Bush. 10 tackles for loss, 5.5 sacks, but led the team in total tackles.
By a lot.
By a lot. 95 total tackles is a big season.
And the pass deflections. He had 7. Was second on the team, only behind Kalik, who had 9.
So this isn't a runaway.
No.
This isn't a runaway. I'm interested. You go first on this one. Who's your choice here?
This is so tough because you look at other numbers like Kalik Hudson. You said the tackles for loss, the sacks.
How about numbers that aren't here coming into the 2018 season? The PFF numbers for David Long and LaVert Hill that are not going to be on, you know, your typical box score, but nobody could throw against David Long and LaVert Hill, you know? So let's not leave them out just because they don't have big numbers.
This is tough. I'm going to go with Kalik Hudson, but he was third on the team in tackles. He's tied for second in tackles for loss, sets the NCAA record for a game. He has 7.5 sacks, which is second on the team. He has 2 interceptions, which is tied for the lead on the team. 9 pass deflections, which is first on the team, and 2 forced fumbles, which is tied for first on the team.
All right. I'm fine with that pick. I'm a Hudson guy. I'm going to go away from the stats and back to the eye test after having watched some of these games again, or at least the highlights. Maurice Hurst was the engine that drove this defense. The one returning starter, he was so dominant this year that it allowed everything else to happen. When you have to put 2 guys like in the center of your offensive line on 1 guy every single time, it is a nightmare to try and find protection. And that's why we lived in the backfield. That I am convinced of it. Like this is a hill I'm ready to die on. That like the reason that our defenses have got progressively worse is we haven't had anybody in the middle that can do anything like that to allow and maybe Don Brown took a lot of heat, but those defenses last year were inexcusable. But like the fact that when we had Maurice Hurst, these guys that are freshmen and sophomores and young guys could just feast in the backfield. Like I'm looking at these numbers compared to 2018 and I'm like, okay, the numbers drop off a little bit. What is the missing factor? And it's Maurice Hurst.
I'm not going to fight you on that. There's honestly 5 guys you could make a case for here with either the corners, with Devin Bush, Mo Hurst, Chase Winovich. I mean, just tons of guys here to discuss, which is crazy on this defense. So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad we could spend some time talking about him because when you go back and look at the numbers, 19 tackles for loss for Chase Winovich is just something you don't even think about. You just kind of forget. You think of the revenge tour the next season.
Right, exactly. And I think that
17 defense was special.
Isn't that what the genesis of this pod was? As we looked back at some of these statistics for this year and we're like, how is this defense so good? And this year's just looked at as an abject failure.
Yeah. Like you said, we're in it now and we're looking at all these numbers. I'm like, man, we could have won more game. We could have won 10 games this season. And then you dig into it. And it's like, wow, we could have won 5 games this season. Just the inept quarterback play, the dynamic rushing, a defense that was just, like I said, lived in the backfield. It's hard to rank defenses of the Michigan era, of the Harbaugh era. That's a hard podcast.
It really is. And was this defense, does it look kind of better on paper because they were in more, tighter games and they were on the field longer? Does that play a role? It might do that. That might be the case in other years. If you're up by 25, Chase Winovich isn't going to be on the field.
And that's a good case for especially 16 and 18 offenses were so much better than the 17.
So much better. And I think in modern college football, you'd rather have that.
Yeah. You have to be able to play complimentary football because I'd love to see time on the field. this defense had to have probably led the country, because the only defenses ranked above them, I believe, were Alabama, Wisconsin, and maybe Clemson.
Right. And yeah, which is crazy, which is crazy. And it brings us to our last category, the biggest what if. We've kind of already been touching on it. I think it's pretty clear with this one, and you can phrase it however you want. But the biggest what if is, what if we had competent quarterback play for an entire season?
Yeah, you could take this you could take this answer a lot of different ways. What if the injury doesn't happen to Spate? What if it doesn't happen to Peters at Wisconsin? What if you see the 4th-and-4 at Ohio State? But it all comes back to that singular point of just competent quarterback play. What if you put, I can't say Dad Rudock, but what if you put last year's Cade McNamara in this offense?
Yeah, Shea Patterson. Pick any of the guys that we've had. Let's even go back before that, like a John Navarre.
Yeah, John, that's a great average quarterback. That is perfect. That is just like,
John Navarre would have taken us probably, like, we lose one game.
Facts, dude. 100%.
That's a one loss team with John Navarre.
Oh, man.
And that's the biggest what if to me, is because you look at these games, and you're right, we could have maybe won 5 games. How do you go 10 for 20 for 58 yards in the Big 10 and win a game? But at the same time, if you're winning that game, how good is the rest of your team that you can survive that awful of quarterback play? It's like a double, it's a catch 22, you know, like, what the hell was this team?
And then after this season, like we talked about, it sparked the coaching changes. This is this wasn't Gattis's first season. 19 was Gattis's first season,
Pep
right?
Hamilton.
Pep Hamilton took over. I loved the 18 team. That was like, that was the revenge tour year.
Yeah.
And up until Ohio State, it's like our only loss in the season was a one score defeat where Patterson got hurt at Notre Dame week one.
Right.
At night in primetime.
Right.
And then you whip off 10 straight and the offense was dynamic. So,
right.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So this year, while like looked at as an abject failure, I don't remember us at the end of this year being like defeated or in any way like this was a lost season. Like, it was, we came into this season with low expectations. So let's start there. Because of one guy returning on defense, Wilton Spate coming in at quarterback, who we were like, all right, we saw against Minnesota and that was okay. We had no idea what to expect there. So I think we thought like 8-5 was about right coming in. Am I wrong thinking that? Like, we didn't have crazy high expectations this year.
Yeah, I think that we definitely tempered them. The opening game is what swung it. Beating Florida like that on a neutral field when Florida was 17, we were preseason 11. It's like, oh, okay, no, we're going to be really good once the quarterback play gets a little bit better. But it's kind of got worse.
The quarterback play got worse. And if you want to talk about this season as like the bigger picture, the quarterback play still plagues us. It is still probably the one thing that separates us, even though it improved from this season. If you had Shea Patterson's best season, a full season of Shea Patterson, this team might go undefeated.
Yeah, you get,
which is crazy.
If you give Karron Higdon the ball board, you might win 10 or 11 games.
Yeah, it's bizarre to think, because we definitely beat. All right, let's just a quick workshop of this. Healthy Shea Patterson on that team, starting the season from game one, what game do we lose? Maybe Penn State.
We lose Penn State.
One game.
Yeah, you lose Penn State, and I think you can make the case they might lose Wisconsin, but I don't buy it because that defense was really amped up for that game, and that was going against Jonathan Taylor. And when the defense is on the field most of the game, you're going to wear down against a running back that good. It's just going to happen. So if if Patterson's out there, defense is going to be a little more rested. So you get the win, and then you play Ohio State. You have a 14-0 lead. You're able to respond and score more in the second half.
I don't know. The Ohio State one's the big enigma because he didn't prove to be a gamer. So I'm a big believer in the gamer mentality, the gamer philosophy.
It just hurt because like that 18 Patterson, like ripping off the Wisconsin blowout, the Michigan State win with the clutch throw to DPJ, the Penn State blowout 42-7. And then you go into, but then the you get the bad taste in your mouth at the end of the season. 62-39 Ohio State, 41-15 lost to Florida in the Peach Bowl.
Absolutely. And in those games, he kind of fell apart. But you know, he had moments where he rose and shined above that. But this was interesting, man. This 2017 team is definitely not as bad as the record indicates, but at the same time, like, is one of the most inept offensive teams I've ever covered in all of my time.
This I'll always remember this season because it was our first season together.
It was.
And we went into the game, you know, feeling everything out. And at least the quarterback play has gotten a little bit better than this.
That's true. Yeah. And we were, you know, kind of feeling our styles out at that point. And yep. Maybe a good season for that, because, like, we learned to temper expectations. And that just because John O'Korn goes, you know, 50% and has a touchdown or an interception, maybe he's not the savior.
Yeah, we shouldn't have anointed him Christ so fast.
He's 18 for 26. He's going to save us.
We kind of just sound like conspiracy theorists at points. Like, look into the numbers. The advanced analytics back it up. And it's like, look into it.
Yeah. They're like Chad Pennington numbers. They were like the most average numbers a human could.
Don't you besmirch Chad Pennington in front of me, sir. Almost went to the AFC Championship game, back-to-back, or not back-to-back, two-time comeback player, threw dimes. He cannot be compared in this sentence, ever. To John He's almost O'Korn. A Heisman finalist.
Well, look, at this point, like, our view of John O'Korn, if you compare anything to that, it's definitely viewed as an insult. Like, oh.
Yeah,
like,
don't you ever compare Chad Pennington to John O'Korn. Like, yeah, Chad Pennington helped me move once.
I made a roast, but my wife said it was like the John O'Korn of roasts. And I'm never making another one.
So that's how I'll describe, like, disappointing. How was your July 4th? The John O'Korn. It was JOK.
Yeah, absolutely. That sums up the 2017 season. All right, brother. Any final thoughts?
No, man. This is fun to look back at a few of these teams. I think we'll have another week off and then back again. And honestly, maybe back every week after that. Be in August.
Well, I've got some ideas. Yeah, we've got limited time, and then it's time to start covering opponents. We have decided the game that we shall be attending is the Northern Illinois game. We will be there. Yes. In the flesh. We would love to talk to some of the listeners out there if you happen to be there for that game. It's going to be so nice to be just back at a sporting event in person. It's going to be great to see you. We're going to act a fool. Looking forward to that. But as far as content, yeah, we're going to start getting into the season. I know it's July now, but the next month is August. And that is, to me, August is, that's football month. Like, there
will
be
a month of wild speculation and optimism.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, speculation begins in August, and that's like 3 weeks away. So while it may still seem like peak off season, it's time to start getting into this team. And, you know, it'll be exciting. I think we're going to really start to get into, like, Cade McNamara and watch the awful tape from last year, but really start to at least focus in on Cade Mack. I'm going to at least, and start to figure out what we got with our starting quarterback this year. So yeah, I'm excited about
Need to go back and watch all. I'm gonna watch every game from last season, even the Penn State game.
It's gonna hurt.
It's even the Michigan State game and Mel Tucker and all that. Like, it's gonna be really bad, because I don't think I've ever talked as much trash as I did before that Michigan State game. And it really backfired.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too deep into it as we're wrapping this up, but just, like, looking at this season as a whole, and maybe the 2017 season is a good season to look back on for some reverence and to get some perspective. Coming into this season, we have a horrible, horrible taste in our mouth, and it's very hard to get excited about football right now. But remember, after the South Carolina game, we had a terrible taste in our mouth. We were like, we can't develop a quarterback. This team is god-awful. This is trash. But there's an opportunity here for this team. And if Cade McNamara is a better quarterback than John O'Korn. Already. The easiest thing I've ever said all night. Like, easy. And
our expectations, I think, are pretty, like, tempered at this point for this season. Like, we're not expecting to go 10-2 this season. Right. We're not.
But at the same time, there's reason that you should be and could be, you know, optimistic for something that's bigger. You know, with what came after the 2017 season and what we saw, they've shown the ability to rebound from a bad season. So maybe there's something there, and I'm excited to start dissecting the opponents and start dissecting the team.
I just want this to be like the Kong Skull Island of seasons, where I go in with zero expectations, expecting to be angry at the end, but really enjoying myself.
I'm looking forward to it, man. All that coming for us. That's going to do it for Out of the Blue. Make sure that you like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, whether it be Apple Music, Spotify, wherever. Follow us on Twitter at Maize and Brew. I am Jared. That is Andy. This is Out of the Blue. We'd like to remind you that wherever you go, go blue.